Well, they better let us record now.
Okay, we are live. Welcome to the Embodiment of Soul Care podcast. My name is Casey. In this other top corner is my beautiful sister-in-law, Kelly. And tonight we are so excited. It's our first time that we have a special guest on our podcast. Mm-hmm. Our inaugural guest is Suzanne Muller, yes. My dear, dear, dear friend. And I call her the love life coach extraordinaire. She's going to explain her own bio a little more in depth, but I really like that title for her.
I do too.
So to start, we're, tonight I actually just went with pink tonic water. And lime.
Boring.
All by itself. I know.
Even though it is pink. You know, Suzanne, we did talk about this. Like, I had this pink rosé. You have red wine.
Ooh.
Casey has pink. I was like, this is all about relationships and love. We're just bringing in the juice.
All the different shades. There are many shades of love and relationships. Whatever works for you.
Yeah. And you know, I don't want anybody to think their eyes are tricking them. There really is three people on this screen this week. Yes. I keep having to go back down, you know, because Suzanne, you're sitting underneath me.
Oh, it's so perfect. Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. So, So what kind of prompted, a couple of weeks ago, we did a podcast on self-love because Kelly and I are developing a course around the ripple effect of deep self-love. And essentially, you know, it's kind of like how the positive effects of our blossoming self-love can ripple throughout our life, our interpersonal relationships, and just the world in general. And the first person that popped in my mind as we were doing that, I called Kelly. I said, oh my gosh, we need to have my friend Suzanne Muller on the podcast to talk about this because there's nobody that could, you know, really expand on that topic and dive deeper than Suzanne. I mean, this is her life's work. And so, we talked to Suzanne and she was so gracious to come on the podcast. So we're super thrilled. And Kelly, did you want to kind of talk about her book?
Yeah. So Suzanne, of course, she wrote a book. It's called Lovable, 21 Practices for Being in a Loving and Fulfilling Relationship. And this is a beautiful book. I don't highly recommend many things. Let me see. Can you guys see it? Because it's so fuzzy.
I know. You can see it.
I love the close-up.
I know, right? But we will put the link on the bottom of this podcast so that you guys can purchase that book. But what I'm saying about this book is it's not only, and I had told this to Casey this morning because I just finished the book yesterday. And Suzanne, I just want you to let you know this, that it's not only powerful in terms of relationships, but it's powerful in terms of your relationship with yourself, which is, you know, as the three of us certainly know and many others, or maybe they don't, that is the primary relationship that we all need to seek. And I feel like this is good for anybody, whether you're in a relationship, in a marriage, just breaking up, or just sitting there with yourself, this is a good read, very good read. And it also is so easy to read. Thank you.
Yes.
Because most of the books that I read, you know, I have to go back and I have to reread like 6 or 7 times. I'm like, what? What was that? And this one, it just flowed. It was so nicely put together. Job well done. Very good. So before I get into more detail about what I liked about the book and also questions for you, how about we throw it to Suzanne and let her kind of intro herself, a little bit of your background. Tell us something about you.
I would love to. Thank you for that intro, the wonderful plug about my book. I wanted it to be easy to read, a quick read for people, make it super simple. So I'm Suzanne Muller. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm a speaker, a coach, an author, and I call myself the master of being lovable because I had one of those backgrounds and past where when I was a child, my dad was alcoholic, bipolar, narcissistic. So my childhood was just tough. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, I made up that I was unlovable, not good enough, unwanted. And I had like the crappiest self-esteem. Like I literally hated myself. And I know I worked in the technology world, but my commitment became helping people feel lovable from the inside out. And it became a lot easier for me to find love, for me to get married, even though I did get divorced and now I have a boyfriend. But the love for myself now is just, you know, it goes up and down, but the practices in that book helped me restore myself back to feeling lovable. So I wanted to help people, whether or not they're married or single or in a relationship, struggling with that world of self-love that you both talk about, how to feel lovable day in and day out, because it is not an easy journey, which we all know. So that's really my commitment, to help people have these healthy, fulfilling, epic, beautiful relationships with somebody or even with themselves. Because I always tell people, and I know you know this, but just being in love these days doesn't make a relationship work. There's so many things that go into a loving relationship. So that is a little bit about my journey and why I wrote Lovable, because I hated myself and I had to learn to love myself, you know, day in and day out. And so I'm so excited to talk about that today with you.
And speak a little bit about, you know, the workshops you do and some of the work that you do, you know, kind of in the last couple of years and the events that you put on.
Oh gosh, sure. So I love working with singles and I do group classes and I host, well, I did host in-person events and now I do virtual meet and mingles for certain groups. Now we're all on Zoom.
Oh yeah. Oh,
seriously. And I do all kinds of topics, online dating, being the irresistible woman, the high quality masculine man, who is he and how did, you know, what does he want? Online dating is actually my favorite subject right now. How to talk about COVID beliefs. And I've also been coaching couples as well, because, you know, people right now are like in the house with each other and they're pulling their hair out.
Yep.
They're either making love like crazy or they're like, okay, can you leave now?
Seriously? Can you get the hell out?
Can you leave now? Or get out the bedroom, one or the other.
Exactly.
I'm joining couples.
Yeah.
Oh,
man.
Oh, that's so great. Awesome. Well, Kelly, do you want to kind of start tossing out some of your questions that came up?
Yeah. Well, first I kind of want to talk about the book a little more, because I feel like it, since we have Suzanne on here, I think it's important that she definitely explains to everybody. I see your book right up there on the shelf, actually, the same one I'm looking at.
Oh my God. That's
sidetracked me. Ah! But, you know, I want you to talk about that self-love. You know, I know we talk about it here on this podcast quite a bit. I want you to kind of address that, the self-love, the self-talk. You talked about it in the book. I loved the love being single part, because that's huge for people. I think there's a lot of people who never spent that time being single. And I think you probably noticed that in relationships where they just become so attached so quickly to this other person that it's almost impossible for them to exist without them. And then when that person wants to blossom and go another direction or try something new, they feel like they're not loved anymore. And so I want you to kind of address that a little bit, Suzanne, how you talk people through that, because I know a lot of people are in that situation, especially now, you know, now that people are kind of getting, you know, they've been boxed in or they've been alone and now they're getting out there again. What is something that you could advise to people for, you know, whether, let's say that they are in their relationship and they see somebody trying to branch out and do something new and they feel uncomfortable about that. So what's your advice to them?
That's a great question, Kelly. I'll address it two ways, actually, because having a childhood that was a challenge, you know, it was difficult. I was like a puppy dog looking for love. Oh, will you love me? Will you love me? Will you love me? And I thought if some man loved me, then I made it.
Right.
Oh God, if some man loves me, and that's all I wanted to do was find love. I was like a puppy dog, honestly. And it never worked. And I attracted all the wrong people to me. I attracted all the alcoholics and just, you know, people that were just narcissists, all of that. So if anybody's in that boat, right, attracting all these like bad partners to you. And what I realized is I had to break the pattern, one, from my dad, and two, I had to break it from myself. Like there was something deep inside of me that needed to get transform or shifted. And a lot of it, like we were speaking to, is your thoughts of, it's not possible for me. This is really hard. There's no good ones out there. So the shift had to start with me first. And then I could go out and explore and figure out, why am I a great partner? Why, what do I have to offer? So a lot of people that are single right now are, like you said, they're kind of moving out of some marriages. They're realizing that that marriage isn't fulfilling. So they're starting new.
Right.
And whether they've been married for 20 or 30 years, or whether they're single right now, kind of been stuck at home for the last eight months. And it's such a great time for people to do the work on themselves.
Right.
And to get ready, which a lot of the practices in that book are about preparing yourself, your mindset, your soul, your heart. Because if those are not in alignment, you got nothing.
Right. And I did love the exercises that you had people doing in this book. You know, the really getting to know yourself, like, how do you feel in these types of situations? And what would you do here? And what do you feel you're lacking? And things like that, really bringing people to, like you said, self-awareness. I mean, if we don't have self-awareness, then we have no idea where it is that we're going just in our daily life, let alone in a relationship. I mean, relationships, we all know, whether you're married or not, or dating, doesn't matter, or getting in the middle of a divorce, they are so difficult sometimes to navigate. And if you don't have that strong stance, like you're talking about, or that knowledge of self, then you just become lost in a tornado of crap.
A puppy dog. You're a puppy dog.
Exactly.
Just looking for love,
exactly.
Hoping to be loved.
Exactly. Exactly. And I really, really, I told Casey, this was a powerful thing in the book. I felt for a lot of people too, is do not identify with your past relationships, you know, and that goes all the way to do not identify with like your father, or do not identify with whatever relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to be, because I'm pretty sure that's what you were getting at. Like, it doesn't have to be just the physical romantic relationship that we're not trying to identify with anymore. It's not identifying with all relationships of the past. So expand on that a little bit too.
That's a really great point, in that there are patterns though that can develop in our friendships, in our relationships, in our, with our siblings, with our family, that if we don't break those, the cycle can go on and on and on. And I have coached people that are 70 years old and they're still picking the wrong partners because they haven't identified the pattern. But what you're pointing to is, if you can not identify with the past, or release the leftovers, or release those patterns.
Leftovers, that's right. That was the word.
You need to create the most magnificent, healthiest relationship they can. Like, I have clients, and I'm in this relationship right now, we're like pinching ourselves. But it's like I can't believe it's possible. Like, the brain can't get its mind around it because it's so good. But people can only have it if they've done the work. If they're still suffering from crap that has happened in the past and they're holding on to it and they're bringing it forward, that is what I call torture for people.
Yes.
It happens.
Yes. I mean, who the hell wants to leave vacation with all the bags of crap? You know, like, let me just take all the shit sand with me and let me take, you know, all the bad experiences. No, who wants to do that? You know? So here's another question for you too, is that, you know, I know a lot of people say things like, well, at least I have clients and friends too, that, and family members that say things like, you know, I really don't want this in a guy, and I really don't want this in a partner, and I really don't want this, and I really don't want this. And they put all that emphasis on the not wanting. And I think we all know that that language needs to shift. And you need to talk just solely about what you are looking for and what you are wanting in relationships, as opposed to, I don't want this and I don't want that. So what's some advice you can give to people that, you know, we're stuck? Like, what's a way for them to kind of rewind and rephrase so that they're no longer attracting that by thinking the negative thoughts of what they don't want?
Yes, that is the advice, Kelly. I wholeheartedly agree with you. In fact, I have to do a lot of shifting of people. They're like, I don't want this. I don't want drama.
Yeah.
I used to say, I don't want an alcoholic. And guess who I attracted? All the alcoholics.
Right.
Rather than, I want somebody that's healthy. I want somebody that's a mild drinker. It is the number one impact to people. I don't want my partner to do this. I don't want my wife to do this. I don't like when my wife does this. All of that is drawing all that crap
back
to them. They have to say, no, that's the hard part. And the reason why I do some of the exercises and I do the typing with a client is they're always going to the past.
Yes.
And I don't want, and I don't want. In fact, I have to help them flip it. Okay, if you don't want somebody that's this, what do you want? It is a constant that I have to do. And if people could get nothing else from this video, Kelly and Casey. Yeah. Kelly and Casey.
No. Is that
focus on what you do want. Do not even say what you don't want, isn't, not, doesn't. Just wipe that all out of your vocabulary and your life will altar everywhere.
Yes. Oh, that's so beautiful. We talk about that constantly because it's, as I said to Casey, I said, you know, we say it, but I think it goes on deaf ears. And when a professional comes in and says it, like, this is, you know, you want a good relationship, you need to stack your books in the good positive zone. You know, you start stacking them in that negative and boy, oh boy.
That's all you'll attract is the negative.
Exactly. C'est la vie to that. Yeah. All right.
And one of the biggest issues, Kelly, is all the people that go out to happy hour and they're all chatting and the girl talk or the boy talk.
Yes.
It's like pervasive.
Yes.
So one of the people in the group needs to go, okay, you guys, stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's stop drinking the poison. Let's start thinking about something good. I mean, if anybody can take anything from this too, it's that. I mean, change your conversations with your friends, change your conversations with your family.
Well, Kelly, it kind of reminds me a lot about, you know, Kelly talks a lot about rockets of desire, you know, and what kind of rockets of desire are you shooting up? And, you know, it just reminds me so much of what we're speaking about, because it's like, those are, what rockets do you want to shoot out there that then can blossom and that then can ripple outwards and then attract and manifest what you really are looking for? So I kind of love bringing in that term right now, because it just fits so well with Suzanne's work. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, it's like, once you shoot that rocket up, it's still there. You know, it just may take longer to manifest if you're not actually going to feed that energy. Mm-hmm. It'll just kind of sit there and hang out until, you know, you get serious and do the work, and then it's still there, you know, so you can go back to it. But I like linking that term in, because it's just such a, you know, kind of a good visual for what do you really want? Like, if you're sitting around with those girlfriends or, you know, some guy friends, it's like, what rockets do you really want to shoot out there? Is that really the one you want to put out? You know, probably not. You know, put the ones out that you really do want to feed.
Yeah. And paying such close attention to that, because you can think, I think we've talked about this, you can think, you know, 70% of the day about something positive, and then for 30% you're in that negative zone. And you, and I don't know about you, Suzanne, but I know Casey and I, you know, in our work and all that stuff, we deal with people that, you know, they think positive, but they don't put any feeling behind it. But then when they're thinking negatively, there's so much feeling behind it. So it's, you know, you have that 30% of the day where they're like beating up on themselves and beating up on life. And there's so much power and feeling and emphasis on it, as opposed to, oh, I'm having a good day. And it has no meaning to them.
Yeah.
So
do you feel like there's something to, like, self-trust that has people not put that feeling behind the positive, like, or not trust of the universe, or is it a lack of trust, or what is that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I've been really researching this, and I have found that it's a doubt. Yes, it's a lack of trust. It's they doubt that it's really possible for them. And we all know that thinking the negative and being in our dark thoughts, it's a lot easier. Like, I think people are in their dark the majority of the day than they are in their light. Mm-hmm. However, I do find that people have a hard time thinking that big. One of the reasons why people can't manifest really what they actually want is because they actually can't think this big, because they're only coming from what they already know, which is why sometimes it takes a counselor or a coach or somebody to help them think this big, because they're down here. And then their mind just tells them, oh, it's not possible, or the lack of trust or the self-doubt, or it's not possible. Then the other piece to this is, then once they have it, let's say they've kept their vibration really high and then they've attracted it to them, their brain is so like, no way, this is not possible to attract this. And then they just sabotage that.
Right.
So I have clients that I have to be like, no, it's possible. And I have to keep their feet on the ground. Otherwise they'll just kill it off.
Yes.
Believe it.
Wow. Yeah. No, I love that idea of the groundedness, you know, that you have to ground that so that it starts to anchor. And that's really beautiful. So what are some of the main, like, what is the technique that you use with people to kind of keep them in that space?
Mm-hmm. In the believing space?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So the first thing, I love the world of manifestation. The first thing I tell people is, you have to relax. Mm-hmm. Nobody can manifest anything.
They're
strong and they're stressed out and like, or you're worried or you're afraid. You can't manifest anything in that space. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest part. You have to relax, and then you have to bring trust and belief to it. Mm-hmm. which is the hardest part when manifesting. Once you're in that place of, okay, relax, then I tell them you can need to be specific about what you want. Mm-hmm. So once you're specific about what you want, it's almost like just float it out. Thank you, universe, for sending me this, or thank mm-hmm. you for that I already have this. And then the pieces along the way is just to be grateful for every little tiny thing that's coming your
yes.
way. If a client mm-hmm. is single and they're online dating and they're, you know, kind of getting the creeps, or they're getting emails from men that aren't very attractive, or, you know, they're like, I said, rather than, oh, I don't want those emails, which is pushing it away. They're right. like, well, thank you for the mm-hmm. emails that I'm at least receiving. Thank you for these nice men that I at least have to turn away and yes. shift them the other side to
That's
it.
Such a shift right. of perspective.
Exactly. It's a total shift in perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like that. I really like
and
that.
Once they can get to here, then I can get them to here. Once right. I get them to here, I can get them to there. But sometimes if they're in a very low vibration, which I'm sure you two ladies know, if they're in a really low vibration, you can't take them from here to all the way up here.
Right. No way. Yeah.
Yeah.
No way.
I like that. Baby steps, which feeds the relaxation. You know, if you have to get from here to 1,000 feet, that's not very relaxing. If you just need to go up a foot, you know, at a time, you can do that. With a okay. pace and with, you know, some groundedness. So yeah, I really right. like that, you know, and the name of our podcast, you know, is the embodiment of soul care. And we really kind of did that because sometimes I feel like, you know, like being in your body, like you said, the groundedness, like, do you feel like, and I guess maybe this might be more for women sometimes, but do you feel like a lack of that self-love, of just being able to be in their body, be comfortable in their body, and for mm-hmm. men too, you know, I mean, I'm sure you see that. What do you see with men, with women? You could either address them separately or kind of together, that once they've kind of anchored more in their body and anchored more in their energy, you know, kind of like that, the most attractive thing is a confident man or woman. It doesn't matter, you know, what their actual physical attractiveness is. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen people really blossom over your years of working with them. I mean, it's like, you know, the same exact person that literally looks differently, right? Like from a few months later or something. So maybe tell us about yeah. some transformations you've seen.
Oh, that's such a great question. So the interesting thing, I'll kind of take it in two parts, Casey.
Yeah.
Question is, the one thing that I've realized about people that can't attract quite yet is that they have to own their uniqueness.
Mm, okay.
And that thing grounds them in who they are. Like, I had a client, she had a really heavy German accent. And she kind of put, like, oh, I have a German accent way at the bottom of her profile. She wouldn't own it. I said, we're going to put that right in the front. You've got to own it, that makes you beautiful, that makes you unique, that makes you special. Yeah. And now her husband loves listening to her German accent.
Wow.
Right. That they're curvy. They're on the heavier side. They don't want to exercise. They don't want to do what it takes. I said, so you either mm-hmm. got to exercise and get your body to a weight you feel confident with, or you've got to own your curves. And mm-hmm. now in her profile, we say, hey, if you need the skinny girl, I'm not that. I am a curvy, voluptuous woman, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we just get them to yeah. own their uniqueness.
Yes. You
know? And I know for myself, I'm really tall. I always wanted to be short. Now I get to, I swear I did. I wanted to be short. And now I love my like tall.
Yeah.
Leanness. So I find that when people really own who they are, that's so attractive. And we know that attraction is confident. And when you're confident, you know, you have more options, you have more choices.
Exactly.
I love that. That's
awesome. You do. No, and that's, you know, that's part, that's going in, you know, back to the whole self-love thing. I mean, just loving those yeah. little bits and pieces about yourself that for so long, whether it was yourself or somebody else that told you they weren't good enough, you know, could be even the television telling people, you know, oh, that figure isn't good enough, or yeah, you need to be more feminine, or you need to be more masculine, and not owning it. I think that's beautiful that you help them capture, you know, those things and really recognize that they are special and they are unique. I like that, owning your uniqueness.
Well, and it's such a power of perception thing, right? It goes mm-hmm. back around full circle because
oh, yeah.
it's only your perception of you, you know, I mean, and the second you shift that, then everything shifts, and it doesn't matter if someone agrees. And eventually, you know, you can then attract someone who agrees with your perception, as long as you're putting it out there. Cause it's so much of, right, like the television or what you think other people are thinking, right? You don't even right. know if they're thinking that. You're the one thinking that. So stop thinking that, you know, I mean, yep.
your own shift in perception is 99% of it, right? So you have that power, you have that control, and to own that. I like how you said own your uniqueness, you know, just own that. And then, you know, you won't even care. It's like, okay, well, the right person may not
be like it or they don't,
or whatever, but I mean, yep. I'm amazing. I'm unique.
Yep. Exactly.
Right. The right person will love it.
Yep.
Oh, always. Now I have an interesting question too. So do you feel, well, I know you don't feel that this is necessary, but I do want you to explain it. You know, a lot of people feel like fulfillment comes just from being in a relationship. You know, like I need to have fulfillment. I need to be married to feel fulfilled, or I need to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend to feel fulfilled. And there's a lot of people, you know, in their late 40s, early 50s, 60s, 70s, I'm sure you know, that still have never been married. And some of them are okay with that. And I want you to speak to those people and let them know that, yeah, this is a good space to be in. And this isn't like something you should beat yourself up about and get upset about. So please speak on that, Suzanne.
Oh, I'd love to, because it is the majority of my client base, never mm-hmm. been married, or, you know, some of them have been divorced. I tell people that this is a great time to be single mm-hmm. because I'd much rather somebody be single and happy with themselves or working on themselves or just being with them mm-hmm. than in some marriage or some relationship that sucks.
Yes.
Seriously.
Like they have the own perception.
Perception.
And choose who is a healthy, fulfilling partner for them. So they should celebrate that. And a lot of my clients have told me, I feel abnormal. I feel inadequate not being in a relationship. Like those people over there, those couples, they're normal. I'm single and I'm abnormal. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of today is like the majority, 51% of the population is.
Yeah, that's what yeah.
Oh, really?
It.
Wow,
and they have freedom and they get to just do whatever they want. And they, you know, yeah, the dating world is tough sometimes. It's different, but it can be so much fun and very, very enjoyable. So I tell those people, you enjoy it. My mother met the love of her life at age 72.
Oh my gosh. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And wow.
She's had 5 great years with him and they're still going strong. And you know, she's now 77 and he's 88. But you are happy as clams. And I tell people, I don't care how old you are, whether you get 1 year, 5 years, 10 years with somebody, the next relationship for them will be the best relationship of their life. And they'll hold it as like precious, like this precious little gem that they will cherish.
Right. So I couldn't agree more. And that's so good for people to hear, because I think a lot of people actually, they do, they kind of suffer in that little space where they feel like they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're not fitting the mold. And it's like, there is no mold. So, okay. So here is my next thing. So this is interesting because this has come to me a few times and I don't know what to say to somebody other than, you know what, let's maybe work a little bit more on your self-love and understanding yourself. But people who are married that would like to step out on their significant other because they just are not getting the affection they need. They're not getting the emotional support that they need. And they're like, you know what? I just feel like cheating just so that I can be touched, just so that I can be hurt. So let's speak on that, because I think there's a few in that.
Really hot topic. Yes. The first thing I'll share is that love languages are critical in mm-hmm. a couple. I think the 5 love languages by Gary Chapman, if people haven't read that book, they should, because I think it's really important to find a partner mm-hmm. that meets at least 2 of your key love languages. Otherwise people go starving. Okay. I was like that in my marriage. And it was one of the biggest reasons why we broke up. So I think love languages for any couple is critical to understand and then give and receive them.
Right,
otherwise
right.
you go starving. Now, my feeling, okay, I may not be very popular when I say this.
I love
there
it.
There are a lot of people in relationship that should not be today.
Yes.
And I'm not a proponent of divorce. However, I am a proponent and people going, I didn't select very well. This is not the fulfilling relationship for me, which I had to do a year and a half ago and make that very big decision, which was not easy as a dating and a love life coach.
Seriously.
But I just realized, and I have an exercise that I do with singles and with couples called my fulfillment list. And it's a very thorough list. I mean, it's big, that has them use almost a numbering system. and a rating system. And it's how my ex-husband and I really mutually figured out that we actually were not the fulfilling couple that we needed. And it makes it so much easier. It's never easy, right, to break up.
Right.
A lot of people will stay in their head. Should I? Shouldn't I? Well, this is really good. Well, I don't want to. And they're so in their head about it that they suffer for years and years and years. And this exercise that I do with people just makes it.
Wow.
Instant clarity.
Yeah. So you're telling me to send them your way.
Yeah, basically.
So they can do the list.
And the beauty of what I do is I give people clarity. I love clarity.
Did you say the list takes an hour?
It takes an hour to create.
Holy shit.
It's 14 different categories.
It's like, thorough.
It's specific. Communication, health and fitness, spirituality, relationships, politics, intelligence, family relations, personal growth, travel, sex and intimacy, career, money, like the key areas of life.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Holy Lord, I think if you sent anybody that list, we'd all be divorced.
Well, here's my bar. My bar is 80% or more. They have to have 80% or more. We're not going for everything. You can't get everything.
Right.
But you have to have enough. That's the thing. People go, oh, we're in love. Oh, we should get married. Oh, well, he's a great lover. Oh, I should get married. Or he has a couple qualities, or she has a couple qualities. Mm-hmm. And then they think it's enough. It's not enough to have a lasting, fulfilling relationship.
Right.
And you need attraction and you need chemistry as well.
Oh, and let's talk about that, because that's a huge jumping point. So let's say, you know, we all know these people. Jump out of relationship, jump in relationship. Jump out of relationship, jump in again. Mm-hmm. Jump out of marriage, jump into a marriage.
Uh-huh.
Constant like this. So what would you say to those people? How much time, or what do you feel their headspace needs to be like? Or what exercises do they need to go through after they end a breakup and before they begin another relationship?
Yes, it's chapter number one
in
the book called Lighten the Load.
Right.
You got to get rid of your leftovers. You got any kind of hurt, resentment, things unsaid, any kind of stuff that lingers from a past relationship will cause you almost to create the patterns into the next relationship.
Right.
And then you're going to do the same things over and over and over again. I call it releasing the leftovers.
Right.
Because then what it does is it unclogs the heart, opens the brain, you can feel love, you can be loved, you can see love again. Otherwise, people just got like stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And they're way too clogged. And they wonder, what's going on? Or maybe it's them. No.
No, it's you. It's unfortunately always you.
What do you mean? You bet. People get out of relationship and they think, oh, let me go date again. That's the solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always, and it's so funny because I have right here in red pen, actually, I don't know if you guys can even see it, but it says the leftovers. Yes.
Leftovers.
Yes.
Well, you know, and I think
you like to eat leftovers, let alone have leftovers.
Well, and I think what's interesting for me is like the leftovers in a relationship, you know, because I do feel like bitterness is the one thing that just kills.
Oh, yeah.
Like while you're in them. You know, and I don't know what you, because I kind of feel like, you know, these phases of the relationship, right? Like we all talk about the honeymoon phase and then it kind of shifts into this. And then, you know, like there was a good friend of mine and, you know, they kind of had like the fairy tale story and the fairy tale wedding and, you know, 10 years later and kids and careers. And she's like, but I don't feel adored anymore, you know? And it's like, I used to feel so adored and now it's just almost too busy. Everyone's too busy to adore. And, you know, I think that goes back to the love languages and just having a lot of presence. Like it really just takes that daily work and that daily input. And then you go through different phases and people shift and change, and to really shift and change together, I mean, can be like, wow, you know, and then you enter kids into the mix, or maybe you do, or maybe you don't, but, you know, maybe talk about kind of the phases of a relationship and what creeps in. Cause I feel like there's so much, I mean, my experience in my marriage has been so much about just constantly being responsible for cleaning out my own leftovers over here with me, not worrying about what work is he doing? Is he changing? Is he shifting? It's like, what am I doing? How can I clear out leftovers? Like a year ago, I cleared like a huge cache of bitterness and it opened up like a huge space in my marriage. It was unbelievable, you know, and that was work I did over here. Because I I don't know, I guess from my own commitment to experience that, you know, and I do want to focus on myself and mostly my own work, and it's not out there. You know, what can I source from within? So I would just be curious, like what you have to say about clearing leftovers as you go so that you can continue to have a fulfilling relationship that also goes through new phases. You know, I mean, I think it's so, I guess as I'm saying this right now, it's almost disappointing. Like there's the honeymoon phase and then you go through this. It's like, that's terrible. You know, you should be able to have, like, you know, Suzanne, I was talking with you about this a few months ago. It's like, you know, what if after 5, 10, 15 years, you're even deeper, it's more fulfilling. You're in more of a honeymoon phase than you were right when you first met. You know, what does that really take? I mean, clearly it will take, you know, does it take commitment from both people? I don't know. I would just love to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, this is a great subject, Casey. I love that you brought it up because it kind of points to what Kelly was talking about, those people that are in and out of relationships, in and out of marriages. Yeah. And I think what you're pointing to is that if people sat down and communicated, like at least not day by day because people do get busy, but at least every week and they cleared out their leftovers with each other, mm-hmm. it's like they're clearing the path. They've got the clean slate. You know, if people get a closed heart, it's because they're bitter or they're resentful or they're hurt or they just have some things that they need to get off their chest. Mm-hmm. Minute you get it off your chest, what happens?
Feel better.
You feel better. You're in love again. You have open feelings. You have an open heart. Like you're like, you know, kind of a thing. But I think the key thing that you're pointing to, Casey, in relationships, and I'm in like a relationship that God, it was in the infatuation stage. And then we're like, you know, we kind of started to get this bumpy road. And then we sat down and had the most beautiful, honest, open, authentic mm-hmm. conversation. And it's like at a different stage now, it feels like this mature kind of love. And what we realized is that we can't hold stuff in. Nobody can hold anything in, whether it's with your girlfriend or your mom or anybody or relationship. That's the number one thing that busts relationships up right now. Yes. If you're holding something in. But the biggest thing though, it's not even that you're holding it in. The biggest challenge that people have right now that I hear is that they don't know how to articulate it to somebody because they're like, oh, I'm going to hurt their feelings or it's going to come out wrong and it's going to come out bad. Yeah. And I think people need to learn how to be messy and just be sloppy and be like, I have no idea how to say this. I just need to say it. And can you give me a minute to just work it out and get it out of my mouth? Because I have no idea how it's going to come out.
Right.
To preface it and caveat it to somebody, because the minute somebody gets it expressed, there's connection again. And I think that's what you're pointing to, whether it's emotional connection or physical connection or heart connection, you're connected again. And so many people live, and I'm sorry for my passion. I'm just so passionate.
No, it's love it. That's why you're on.
Oh, people get disconnected. And the minute you get disconnected, and people know when they're disconnected.
Come
on, you can feel it. The minute you get disconnected, you could be like, okay, when can we sit down and talk? Whether it's half an hour or an hour, put the kids to bed. They have to talk about it. If they don't, it's done.
Blow up, yeah.
Bottom line.
Yeah.
And the more that builds up, right? We all have like had like build up and then.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh.
That's why. If I was going to
never.
You got to talk about it early, and often, early and often. Look, when I was with my ex-husband, I was kind of a nasty bitch. When I got upset, I was like. And what I had to learn, and now with my boyfriend, he's like, you're so great about how you communicate with me. You're so nice about it and kind about it. I'm like, oh, thank you. I never want to be like that again. I don't want to be that bitch. I just don't. I want to express myself, and I know myself in my self-awareness that I have to express it early, often, quickly. Otherwise, it just all builds up inside and we all know what happens.
Yeah, right.
And that does. It's not pretty.
Yeah. No. And you know, and sometimes those explosions, you know, yeah, it's not a good thing. We do need to talk about it. We need to talk about it before that happens. That's a good point.
Well, and I love what she said about being messy, because I think that's so hard.
Yes.
You know, we want to be all put together. We
want to
be
the exact
right way. And I think I like what you said about prefacing it. Like, I, you know, it's kind of like that. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know exactly what to say, but I'm just going to put it out there. And that is preferable to just holding in it until it's perfect. I love that idea because I think so many of us do struggle with that. And you know, clean it up after or whatever, but at least if you're honest about it, you know, that kind of diffuses half of it, I feel like. So I think that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
biggest thing. It takes out of that ego space.
People don't know how to say it. They don't know how to start.
Yeah. Right.
So let's give them permission to be a little messy or to caveat and say, hey, I'm really sorry for how this is going to come out. I just need to speak it out. Can you just let me talk for just a minute?
Right.
And then you have the stage. And then I think it'll be so much more well received. And they understand that you're just trying to get something out of your mouth. Now, if somebody takes it defensively and you're being as nice as you possibly can, that's on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's on them.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
But it may also create a space, you know, for them to then be authentic where they're like, wow, maybe I was thinking that too. Or maybe they come back 5 days later and like, you know, I get it. And I kind of, you know, so kind of the interim messy, there may be a few messy days in the middle, but maybe it comes out 5 days later. And I think so much of that for me goes to like the self-trust piece. It's like, if you have an intuition that you need to say something or whatever, and maybe it doesn't go well in the moment or, you know, but to have some trust and to know that it's working its own process. Mm-hmm. And so if you really do feel called, do that. And then, you know, kind of see how it unfolds, give it some space to unfold. And trusting in some of that without it needing to be perfect in the moment and like all wrapped up in a bow. Okay. We talked and it's in a bow. Great. You know, I mean, it's not always going to go that way. Right.
So yes.
Okay with that. Don't always expect it. You know,
I'd love to add to that. John Gray, who endorsed my book, he said, talk. And if, you know, any one of you gets full or it's not going so well, take a break. Okay. Go do something that you like. Go take a walk, take a shower, sleep on it, and then come back and talk a little bit.
Yes.
You don't have to, like you said, right? You don't have to get it all out in one sitting. It might take a couple of days or a week to flush it all out and have more conversations.
Yeah.
Like and you know, and I love that point that you just made because a lot of people are like, oh, never go to bed mad. Well, here's my thing. Because sometimes my husband and I will get in a tiffy. And I'm not in the space to talk about it. And I don't want to bring myself there, especially before bed, because I want to sleep well, which he's always shocked that during a fight that I can sleep well, but I can.
How dare you sleep well?
But anyway, I'm always like, you know, I'm just going to go to sleep and I'll talk to you about it in the morning. You know, and I love that you said that, like, yeah, go and sleep on it. If you need to sleep on it, sleep on it. If you need to take a walk, take a walk, you know? And that brings me to this too, because this is something that my husband and I deal with, and I'd like your input. I mean, I have some things that I do, and I know my siblings suffer with this too, so it's going to actually benefit Casey as well. But we come from a family where a lot of affection was not shown, like between our parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of always a closed door deal. A lot of affection was given to us, you know, by our mother, by our father, whatever the case may be, you know, like, you know, loving us, kissing us, hugging us. But we all tend to, all my siblings, maybe like two aside that don't have that so much, but I know my brothers and I are definitely in the space where we're not as affectionate. Like we don't show our love through touchy-feely.
Mm-hmm.
We show our love more through communication, more through doing. Mm-hmm. And I know for our partners, each one of our partners, they're more of like, hug me, hold my hand, love me, kiss me. And we're just like, oh, you know, I didn't even think of that. I'm going through the motions, you know, I'm making your dinner. Doesn't that show you that I love you? You know, but you know, they need, like you talked about, different love languages.
Yes.
And so kind of, you know, speak on that a little bit, like how can those two kind of meet in the middle and make things a little bit more, you know, where you're satisfied, I'm satisfied, you know,
Yeah. I think you actually pointed to it really brilliantly, Kelly, which is you have to ask for it sometimes.
Right, right.
Because so my boyfriend and I both have touch and words of affirmation as a love language. So it's really easy because we both like it and we both need it. So it's really easy.
Right.
My sister, she's more of a deeds of service person and quality time versus like a touchy feely words of affirmation.
Right.
When I'm with her, sometimes I don't feel love. Like, does she love me? Mm-hmm. But it's not the case. I really realize that that's not it's not the way she does love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's what you pointed to is sometimes you just have to ask, can you hold me? Can you hold my hand? Can you take out the garbage for me? And you just have to ask for it, especially if love languages are a little bit different.
Yeah. And that's how my husband works because, you know, I am a deed lover, you know, like, oh, I do this, I do that, blah, 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 blah. Clean, you know, I'm like Miss Susie Homemaker. And that's how I show, you know, my affection, my love, my care. Oh, you need another pillow. Here you go, honey. You know, and he's like, I don't really want any of that. Like, I can do all that for myself. Can I just
Touch me? Touch me.
Yeah, he's like, can you touch me? Like, show me that you love me. Like, this is how I love. And I'm like, what do you mean? okay, yeah, of course. You know, but you just, so that's good. That's good. So he does. Okay. I'll have to give him props. He does the right thing.
Got
to
give him props because he's going to ask for what he wants. Because if he doesn't ask for what he wants and he doesn't get the touch that he needs, he doesn't feel loved.
Right.
It's almost like somebody's starving or craving something that they're not getting. It's like they're empty. It's literally like their tank is empty, and you could do deeds of service for him all day long,
all day, and it won't
work. He doesn't feel it.
Right. Yeah, because he's not. Because he always tells me that he's super self-sufficient. He doesn't need all that, but he can't touch and love himself. And he, you know, not love him, you know what I mean, but touch and show affection to himself. And I'm like, okay, I get it. Okay, so I'll tell him, good work, buddy.
Good work. Yep. Yeah. I talk a little bit about the love languages in my book too. I think it's chapter 4.
Yeah.
I do like the quick cliff notes, right? Here's the summary of the book, because everybody gets it and receives it very differently. And it is an important topic in relationships.
Yes, it is.
I really think, too, though, it's so important to know the other person's and then also just train yourself to feel loved in the way that they naturally show love. I've also found that to be really important, rather than, I think it's just a 50-50 thing, ideally, because it's like, sure, you can ask, you know, so that they can show it more in the way you feel it. But if their natural expression is a particular way, to then be able to shift your perception and go, okay, I know them now. You know, I mean, I think it's easier the longer you're with them, or, you know, those kinds of things. Rather, it either goes one way or the other. It's either they're not giving me, because sometimes you might ask and it's literally like so unnatural for them. It doesn't even speak your language because they're just so awkward at it. Clearly, I'm speaking from experience. Like, it's so unnatural. It doesn't feel like your love language. So you're at the point of like, okay, I choose to be with this person, or I don't choose to be with this person. And, you know, so I think that that's an interesting one too, is retraining yourself so that you feel loved in the ways that are natural for them. And I think that that holds a lot of power too, if that is something you're willing to do. But you can take that kind of control and that kind of power and play with it. You know, I think it's a fun thing to play with and to be like, oh, that's right. You know, it's like a mindfulness piece. It's like, oh, that's right. You know, maybe by default, you wouldn't feel it, but you train yourself to remember, oh, that's how they show love. And to kind of have that gratitude piece, like, oh, that's right. That's them loving me. Because people are so different. And, you know, it's no different than me teaching my child, like, you need to, you know, like whether you're like not being a victim in the world or something like that, you know, these really basic life lessons, so that you are aware of the world not needing to be different, so that you're okay, that you're so okay and secure that you can also let the world be how they are. And I think so much of that relates to your partner, so that they don't feel wrong. Like, well, you speak the wrong love language. I just think it's a really fine line. I think it's wonderful to ask. I think that's beautiful. And then I think it's also beautiful to really embrace who they are. You know, I have this whole thing, like, nobody's an a la carte menu. You know, it's like, you don't just get to say, well, I want those pieces and I don't want those pieces. It's like, they are who they are. Just like, I want someone to accept me, you know, and I'm not necessarily, you know, and I've been able to train myself, like, you know, Teddy has some different love languages I wasn't necessarily very adept in, but over the years, as I'm like, wow, that's how he feels it. And it's important to me. So I'm going to develop myself in that love language because he's going to feel it, rather than forcing him to feel it my way. You know, then I've taken it upon myself to be like, okay, I'm going to, you know, do my best to, you know, do it his way. So I think it's kind of fun if it's playful and light. You know, there is a playfulness to that. That I don't know. I just think, but I think the mindfulness piece is really important because it takes mindfulness to have self-love, right? It takes mindfulness to, in your relationship, whether you're dating or married or whatever, to bring that kind of mindfulness to the table. It just has so many ripple effects. So it's just another opportunity for development.
Yeah, I'll add to that, Casey. I threw out a concept one time to a group that we were doing the five love languages and figuring out what your top two are. And I said, what if you could actually get good at all five of them?
Yeah, seriously, I love that.
The rivals were like, oh, wow, that'd be kind of cool. Like, what if you could get kind of good at all of them?
That's awesome. I love that. Yeah, because it's something fun to play with. It's like stepping out of your own box, you know? And I think that that's so important for people too, because we can get so rigid. Like, well, this is what works for me. It's like, I don't know. Are you sure about that? Is there something else that might also work for you? Like you said, I mean, what if you learn to feel loved through all five and to express love through all five. So that no matter who, whether it's a mother, whether it's a father, whether it's a, you know, because I think at this point in the discussion, it is good to open it up to this, you know, the love languages relates to children. It relates to family. It relates to friends, right? So it's kind of all the same thing. Do your friends feel loved by you? Are you speaking their language? Are they speaking yours? Are you demanding that they speak yours? Or can you just appreciate what they offer to you? You know, so I think that that's a really good point too, you know, as you kind of just look at how it ripples outwards. But that's so fun. Like, how do you become adept at all five? I think that's super fun.
So I'm going to speak on that just for a second. And Suzanne, you kind of feed in, and Casey, you too. So I agree with the, you know, like changing some of your love language to fit somebody else. But I don't agree with changing things that are important to you to be able to adapt to what's comfortable for somebody else. You see what I'm saying by that? So like not completely shifting everything that you are just so that person is super comfortable. So I agree with some of those statements. I just want to make that clear to our viewers that, you know, those that are getting, you know, possibly raped in bed at night because that's how their husband shows their love and affection.
Right, right. I mean, there's
and they're uncomfortable. You know, they don't need to be okay with that. Right. You know, like they're, and if they're not being, you know, touched and held correctly, or they're being, you know, like pushed or nudged, or, oh, that's just how he loves me, or that's how she loves me, you know, to know that there is that boundary. I just want to like make sure our viewers hear that clearly, that there is an importance in how they want to be loved and also how someone else wants to be loved, but most importantly, how they want to receive it.
Yeah. And I think some of those things in my mind just wouldn't even fit under love language.
Right, right, right.
Not love. You know what I mean? So I think more authentic love.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I'm just I'm just adjusting that in case people are like, well, my husband, you know, that's, you know, he shows love by just crawling on top of me and that's it. And I'll just have to deal with his love.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, if you're uncomfortable and it's not fitting you and it's not satisfying to you, then let's not even, you know, go to the 14 things and
that's
spend an hour knowing that that's not your love language and it's okay. So yeah.
And you always have the choice, you know, do you want to be in the relationship or not? And ultimately that's you making the choice every single second of every single day. You're in it or not in it. And that's you, you know, that's not actually on the other person. That's on you, you know, and you can powerfully make your choices in any moment. And I love having that sense of self-empowerment as well. Yes, you know, it's like if someone, you know, so you always have choice. If you're in a relationship, you're choosing to be in it, you know, always.
Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, clarify and make sure that we come back to, you know, the self-power and that understanding. And Suzanne, if you want to speak on that a little bit, because I'm sure you've had experience with people that, you know, felt like they had to change completely who they were to be with somebody. And
absolutely. And I'll speak to my ex-husband, and he and I are on good terms now. It's great. He even works on my website now. Like, we're on really good terms, but we had some pretty different love languages, and I just felt so starving and empty sometimes. And he did his best with what he wanted to give his love. He's like, but I'm working on your website and I'm cooking you meals and I'm taking you shopping. And I'm like, you're right. Thank you. But it just wasn't how I wanted to feel loved. It was so interesting. And then once we sat down and did our fulfillment list, we were actually, you know, I had only done the version 2 of the fulfillment list, which is not the version in the book. About 4 years ago had I developed it, and he didn't have a list. And so we literally sat down. I was like, God, I'm so unfulfilled. I'm unhappy. Like, what's, is it me? Is it him? Is it us? Like, we sat down and did it one afternoon, and it took us about an hour and a half, right, to go back and forth and write it and then go back and forth and score it. And we only met 50 to 52% of each other's lists. And it was like, oh my gosh, huge relief, light bulb, and oh crap, you know, like relief, but sadness and grief as well. But the numbers didn't lie. And I hate to be so black and white about it, but you know, we were nowhere near 80%. And then we're like, oh, no, there's just somebody better and more fulfilling for you. And now my boyfriend and I, there's appreciation like oozing off of the walls and gratitude. Like, I've never met anybody that has so much gratitude. And then he's a wonderful touch person as well. Like, he needs it. And when we connect, it's not like, it's not only, you know, love making, but it's the
holding hands. It's the hand on your leg. It's the cuddle on the couch. It's the kiss and the hug in the kitchen for 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's all it takes sometimes for a love language person to feel connected.
Oh yeah.
Moment.
Yeah. I see that with my husband all the time. You know, it's just, if I stop what I'm doing and I just turn around and give him a hug, he's like, oh, that's all I needed. Okay. I'm good for like 10 days. That's what he says to me. I'm good for 10 days. And I'm like, all right.
Oh, that's crazy.
How much can I get done in 10 days before I need, no, I'm just kidding.
You should just have a timer that goes up every 10 days. Hug time.
I know. Oh, hug. Okay. Here we go. Yeah. No, that's great. I love that.
So the other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit in your book is the love letter. Talk about this, because I used to tell people this years ago, like, manifest this person by writing a letter to the universe.
So, yes. In fact, I have to give credit to Catherine Woodward Thomas, right? In the book.
Yes.
What's the book? I can't recall it right now.
What's
the book? Catherine Woodward Thomas. Something about 30. I don't know. Anyway, track
it up. Yeah, I read that whole like letter to the universe in Robert Ahotto's book.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so it's a letter to yourself from your future partner. Like, dear Kelly, I can't believe I finally found you. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it just opens up your heart a little bit more. Just opens your heart, almost like has you speak to your almost inner child a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's just one more of those preparation exercises to get your heart ready for it. In fact,
Is it Calling in the One?
Calling in the One, yes!
There you go.
Calling in the One.
Yes.
We'll put that in the resources section.
Yes.
Great book. So I summarize that chapter in my book around writing a love letter to yourself. And it's the last piece of preparation work that I have people do, because it's very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's kind of cheesy. It's not going to be easy. But sit down and just start, dear Casey, what would you want your future partner to write?
To say to you. Yeah. I mean, I loved that piece because it's, you know, and that's a part of manifesting in the positive space, because they're going to be positive in there. There's going to be a little bit like, I don't want you to do this, but I do want you to be like this. And, you know, that type of thing or whatever. I like that piece a lot. I think it's powerful for people to do when they're looking for the perfect mate, or if they're looking for an improvement in their relationship, to even write that letter. You can even write that letter as if you're writing it to your mother. You could write that letter as if you're writing it to your father or to a sibling or to a friend or, you know, to your already current husband or wife.
Yeah, they could write it to each other. Right?
Yeah.
Give me a love letter. I'll write you a love letter.
And they,
you know, they read it to each other to spark the romance. And then the one thing that I did is, once I wrote that love letter, I remember keeping it like in a Word doc on my desktop computer. And every time I was single and I was like, my thoughts started to be like, oh.
You read it.
I would read it. And instantly, like, boop, right, my vibration would go up. And I used it as a tool, besides the many other, you know, tools that are in that book, to kind of keep your vibration high. Because we all know, like, dating, come on. Mm-hmm. People think dating sucks and it's time consuming, pain in the ass, and, you know, exhausting. People will say all those things.
Yeah.
But I help people really shift the vibration, because you know, if you think dating sucks and your dating life is not going to go very well.
No, exactly. No. I mean, if you're already going into it like that, you can just expect the black. But Casey, do you have another question? Because I wanted to know if Suzanne's writing another book.
Oh, that's a great question.
You better be behind the keys, lady.
I am. So, good. One, I'm writing a book with my sister right now. It's actually on a different topic. It's about money, because because relationships with ourself and money are very important as well.
Right.
It's more about how to live. When COVID hit, people were like, oh crap, I don't have any money. And people were getting laid off and all of that stuff. Jobs ended. So it's more about how to live under your means and still be happy and have
a good life.
And then our next book we're writing next year is for men. Because a lot of times I find that women love to work on themselves, right? We're almost like soaring.
Right.
And men are still struggling out there. So my sister and I are going to write a book for men specifically next year. And then I need to get a version
with her.
What was that?
That's neat that you're doing it with your sister. That's so neat.
That's good. It's
Well, then too, because it sounds to me like you both have kind of like different perspectives on a lot of stuff. So that'll make it really interesting. Yeah. Like you speak different love languages. So I'm sure you speak different money languages, which I'm sure you speak different.
We do. She lives in Europe.
Oh, okay.
I live here in the States.
Yeah. So you have totally different, you know, that's like my sister, Casey's sister-in-law, you know, she has a totally different money language than we do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're the housewife that has our occasional on the side thing. And she's like this huge corporate, you know, in the CEO world of all this stuff and totally different money language. So that'll be interesting to see, you know, both of those, professional career here in the States versus hers money versus that's great. I like that. I like that you're working on that with her. And I really think that's important that men have a book. I don't think there's enough out there for them. It's like when Casey and I were talking about our whole self-love thing, Casey would always bring men into the subject. She's like, well, don't you think that we should include them? Like, absolutely. Well, do you think that they know what, like, are they comfortable with the
like, does that,
self-love?
Yeah, does that term speak to them? Would they want self-respect? Like, I was kind of trying to be get in their world a little bit.
That's so interesting. Like, what's the term that men would resonate?
Right. So I would ask my husband, I'm like, hey, Matt, do you think that, like, would you resonate with the word self-love? He's like, well, yeah, but I think you have to have kind of like those hippie dudes, you know? He's like, but those are the kind of guys that are going to go for that stuff, you know? Just use the word. You either connect with it or you don't. And I was like, okay. So, yeah. So that's wonderful. Well, good. I'm excited about your next book. But I do recommend that everybody does go out and grab themselves a copy of Lovable. Where can we find this besides on Amazon?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Okay. It's in a couple Barnes & Noble stores here in Colorado, but for the most part, Amazon, probably the easiest. Or my website, they can catch it on my website.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to that as well on the bottom of this podcast. And Suzanne, is there anything else that you find is really important for people to know about relationships and love that you want to kind of leave us all with this evening?
My favorite practice in the book is the saying that says, you know, whether or not you're like, what do I say to this person or what do I do? My favorite quote in that book is, if I follow my heart, trust my instincts and honor myself, what would I do or what would I say? Mm-hmm. And that saying helped me get through some really hardships in dating, and it helped me follow my heart through the dating process and through my marriage and through relationships. So that's the one tip that I would give people today, whether you're in relationship, whether you're married or single, remember, if you trust, because a lot of times people get really scattered with their instincts, but if you follow your heart, trust your instincts and honor yourself, ask yourself, what would you do or what would you say? And you can never go wrong with that.
I love that.
It's beautiful.
Really good.
Well, thank you so much for coming
on
the
podcast. Yes.
Thank you
so much. Well, I don't know about you ladies, but I finished mine. Almost. I just got the last drop because I wasn't going to let that go.
Oh, seriously?
You ladies are so fun.
Well, thank you for being with you. Suzanne, you were a joy to have on tonight. And what a wonderful guest for our first guest. You're going to have to come back on.
Would love to.
Yes. And we'll dive deeper into relationships. And I think the topic of sex, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Yeah. Why not?
Always fun.
Yeah. So yeah, let's do that. And we're excited to see you again. And please do not stop loving yourselves. That is the key of tonight. Mm-hmm. Love yourself and you'll be in a beautiful relationship because you'll attract that same love to you. Yeah. So that's it for me. Ladies, beautiful job.
Yes, signing off. Thank you so much. Cheers.
Cheers. Great to
love
be with
to
you.
All. Have a good night.
Thank you, Suzanne. Have a beautiful evening.
Thank you so much.